I want to welcome you here this afternoon and certainly express my appreciation for this opportunity. I think it's obviously a very important topic. Anytime that we talk about drawing other people, in this context specifically young people, to Christ, the reason that that is such an important topic, of course, is young and old. We all have souls, we've all been created in the image of God, and one day, of course, each one of us will stand before that God in judgment. And I'm optimistic. I am optimistic about this topic. I am optimistic for the future. In many respects, I'm optimistic about my generation of younger people, and hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about that as we move along. With just 15 minutes, I'm going to try and give you just a basic bird's eye view of the manuscript that I prepared. Certainly encourage you to read through that, and as you have comment or questions, I certainly would be interested in talking to you about that. I think between the three different manuscripts, we have some very good balance. Mine was primarily about trying to appreciate who, at least from my perspective, young of the 21st century are. Dan's, more than anything, if I were to try and summarize it, from the standpoint that, of course, the gospel is for all, the gospel calls everyone, and that we need to do our best in respecting that, and then finally Steve, in talking principally about the social gospel, gimmicks of the social gospel that very frequently come into this discussion. If you've got your Bibles, back in John chapter 4, one of the most logical places it would seem to me to begin is in John chapter 4, and we'll notice just verse 35, where Jesus gives us a masterful statement that was true nearly 2,000 years ago and is obviously still true. Where he says in John 4 and verse 35, "Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest." We recognize that just like a little seed, every generation has great potential. Every generation brings a new harvest. That has been true since the beginning of time. You've got the greatest example of pure, unadulterated optimism for the future with Adam and Eve. And that has already been discussed in this lectureship. With Adam and Eve's children naturally come fresh promise for the future with Cain and Abel. And all the way through the Old Testament, we've got a type of roller coaster ride through the story of Israel, Abraham's descendants. One generation will humbly receive Jehovah's instruction and stand strong by what he has said. Another will rise up with very little regard, it would seem, for reverence and for servitude. The promise of potential is fresh with each new generation, but at times, of course, that is dashed with disrespect and disobedience. The obvious question when it comes to potential is, what will we do with that potential? Will we do our best to stand up and to meet that and enthusiastically live in the joy of that potential, or will we squander it away? I, in the manuscript, spent some time in trying to break down the topic of our discussion this afternoon. We're seeking to draw. And even though we might believe that we don't have that much influence on other people or successive generations, I would contend that the impact of our influence cannot be overstated. I asked in that manuscript that one of the basic questions that we've got to ask from the very beginning is, what point of spiritual development? From what point are we trying to draw those who are younger and weaker and more impressionable? We need to think about the standpoint that we are drawing from to begin with, and obviously it is very commendable. Anytime we talk about drawing others toward a higher ideal, but we've got to make sure that we are drawing from stable spiritual ground ourselves. The Pharisees, of course, are an excellent example. As Jesus talks with them in Matthew 23 and talks of how they will go far and wide to make one proselyte, but when they do, they make him twice as much a child of hell as themselves. Who are we trying to draw? We're trying to draw the young of the 21st century. I spent a great deal of time in trying to hammer that point home. The young of the 1950s and 60s and 70s, with all due respect, have grown and matured. They no longer exist as the young, and prudence would seem to dictate that we make sure we're trying to draw a generation of people that does still exist. And at times that involves the asking of some hard questions. We need to be mindful of the people that are around us. Of course, I would contend that the New Testament bears that out. Peter, James, and John, and other men like them, used the Old Testament scriptures in trying to draw those that were Jews. Paul did something entirely different in Acts chapter 17, a masterful example of how he took the time to understand and to address a specific audience. One of the other verses that I would say is extremely important, if you open your Bibles back to 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, just to illustrate Paul's very deliberate efforts to conscientiously approach his audience and to be mindful of who it was he was trying to draw. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 19 through 23. We won't take the time to read all of that. He makes the point that the Jews, he became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those that were under the law, I became as one under the law, and vice versa. He concluded there in verse 23, I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. I'm doing this. I've become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. He was willing to think about his audience and willing to think about who it was he was trying to draw. He recognized that in some instances one thing may not be as helpful as it was in another instance or as expedient perhaps as it once was. The best reasoning, I would contend, and perhaps we can talk about this a little more as our time moves along, but the best reasoning can be shamefully wasted by failing to understand the people that we're trying to draw. The most earnest of efforts can be pointlessly squandered on a target audience that no longer exists. And so if we are trying to reach a world that is past and gone, we may be very conscientious and very diligent in that, but we also may find ourselves, like that man in Matthew chapter 25, in one sense burying our talents into the ground. Who are the young of the 21st century? I've given seven things that stand out to me. I'm speaking on very general ground. Obviously, this is my point of view, and there are multiple exceptions, I'm sure, to the rule. But just very briefly, the young of the 21st century are informational savvy. There's no doubt about that, and I have provided a number of examples of that. Young people have access to more information at the touch of a button than anyone could have possibly imagined 50 years ago. I've quoted a variety of different things here. One report, nearly 75% of the U.S. population above the age of 2 and living in households equipped with a fixed phone line have access to the internet. Another study, 98% of all young people have used a computer. 96% go online. We are dealing with an information-savvy group of people. Hand in hand with that, they are technologically savvy. I've got three different reports. Just one to summarize, from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, about 6 months ago, newspaper readership is down, was the title of that article. The average age of a newspaper reader is now 55 years old. Number three, the young of the 21st century are very open to new ideas. In the mind of the modern young person, information is power. Young non-Christians are often willing to engage in all kinds of religious discussions, if for no other reason than just to increase their own personal knowledge base. Number four, the young of the 21st century are seeking to make their faith their own. They're struggling with the evolution from "this is what my parents believe" to "this is what I believe." And they are immersed in all kinds of information and revolutionary tools to access that information. But still the basic question exists, what do I believe? They're not afraid to ask hard questions. Many of you know that firsthand. The young of the 21st century are not afraid to ask questions that are absolutely settled in the minds of those that are older. In fact, we could argue that it is a recreational activity for some young people, simply to ask why, and why do we do what we do, and are not afraid to challenge. As they wrestle with those hard questions, they crave real, open, and honest discussion. I believe that young people are anxious to test their personal opinions and conclusions in a give-and-take kind of crucible. Number seven, the typical young person of the 21st century is largely unsatisfied with the status quo. They are frustrated by those who do not appreciate the asking of hard questions. They believe that there is room for improvement physically, socially, politically, spiritually, whatever it is that you want to talk about. And in many instances, they are willing to work to bring about that development, but they are largely unsatisfied with the status quo. Finally, in spite of all of that, it would seem that they are optimistic and very zealous about the future. They believe that things can be better and that progress can be made. Spent just a little bit of time in that manuscript, and if you have questions or comments about that, certainly we would welcome those. What we are trying to draw the 21st century to, we are not trying to draw them to faith in God or obedience in God based solely upon our faith. We recognize that they are called to develop a faith of their own. We're not seeking to draw them to a social club, and I think based on his manuscript, Steve, we'll talk about that quite a bit more in more detail. Our task is not just to adapt some new and clever form of the social gospel for the 21st century. We're not seeking 21st century American Christians as much as we are seeking Christians that happen to live in the United States of America in the 21st century. That is perhaps something that we could spend a great deal of time in talking about. We're not seeking to draw the young to human traditions. We are called to be Christians. The young are called to be Christians by God, not Campbellites. Our chief objective is not to perpetuate the Stone Campbell movement. Our job, of course, is to bring them to the Scriptures. Our task is not to guide them into the path of denominationalism. We need to be careful about that in our language and in our mindset. We're seeking to draw the young to Christ. We're seeking to draw the young to the whole Christ, the Christ that exhibits amazing grace and profound concern for people, but also the one who spoke with authority and expected people to humbly receive and diligently obey his commands. Last part that I have there, I know my time is running short, 15 minutes goes awfully fast up here. What do the young of the 21st century desperately need? I brought up four things. They need you to be honest. They are seeking people of intellectual honesty, of moral integrity. They want to be a part of an honest church. We We can talk a little bit more about that. They need to be able to talk with good Bible students that are willing to listen to their thoughts and discuss their new ideas and the hard questions and cares and concerns that they have. They need people who care. They need people who care about other people and about the souls of other people. And they need to be able to follow people who love God and love His Word with all of their heart, all of their soul, and all of their mind. They need, in the language of Paul, older men that are sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, love, steadfastness. They desperately need older women that are willing and able to teach what is good, reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. Appreciate your attention and am looking forward to our discussion.